Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free, daily, 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America's Learning English branch in Washington. It's Friday, November 27th, 2015, the day after Thanksgiving. In the United States, we call this day Black Friday. It's one of the busiest, if not the busiest, shopping days of the year. Today has been known as Black Friday since at least the 1980s. It is the day when many stores lower their prices and many people begin their Christmas shopping. It became bigger and bigger through the 1990s and 2000s, and is now a day when many people don't work. They just shop, sometimes for hours, beginning in the early morning. Today on the program, we will ask a difficult question. Why, 6 years after almost 60 people were killed in an election-related attack in the Philippines, has no one been convicted and sentenced to prison?
These are all meant to just further the status quo of those who are in power.
Then, as we always do on Fridays, we will bring you the economics report. And as we do every weekday, we will present the making of a nation. So, you can see, we have a lot for you today on this day after Thanksgiving. Every day here on As It Is, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English. Because we exist to help you learn everyday American English, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program, then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills every day of the year. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. Six years after almost 60 people were killed in the southern Philippines during elections, no one has been sentenced to prison. One of the main suspects has died. One of his sons, who was accused in the attacks, is running for political office. The attack happened in Maguindanao Province, in the southern island of Mindanao. At least 57 people were killed. At least half were reporters, says the National Union of Journalists of the Philippines. Alwin Alburo is the vice chairman of the union. He says the political climate in the area has not changed since the attack.
Political patronage, warlordism, private armies, electoral violence, electoral dishonesty, These are all still present, and even the corruption of our colleagues in the media. These are all meant to just further the status quo of those who are in power.
Union officials say 196 people are suspected of planning or carrying out the attacks. They are not optimistic that the attackers will be punished soon, they say. But they will continue to talk about the attack and help the victims' families. On November 23, 2009, more than 100 men shot at a group of reporters and supporters of Ismael Mangu Dadatu. He was a candidate for governor of Maguindanao. He is now in his second term as governor. Mangu Dadatu sent his wife and sisters to the area to deliver his registration as a candidate. The reporters were there to document the event. The victims were shot on a mountainside and buried in a large grave, says the Committee to Protect Journalists. The grave was dug using government-owned construction equipment, the committee reports. The committee says other reporters have been attacked in the Philippines since then. It said the killing of reporters often goes unpunished. It said this has affected reporters' work. Members of a group that was fighting to control the province have been charged with the attack. Officials say Andal Ampatuan Jr. led the group that killed. His father, three brothers, and another family member have been charged with planning the attack. The family members deny being involved in the attack. They have asked to be released from jail, but most of their requests have been denied. Andal Ampatuan Sr. died in July. Earlier this year, one of his sons, Sajid Islam Ampatuan, was released from jail after paying bail. He is now campaigning to become mayor of Sharif Aguac, the capital of Maguindanao. Alwin Alboro says President Benigno Aquino is not pushing hard enough for the attackers to be punished. Edwin Lacerda is a spokesman for the president. He called Alboro's accusation unfair. Lacerda says the courts are dealing with the case. He said the president hopes a decision can be reached in the case before his term ends in July. Political expert Ramon Casipla said he is optimistic that the alleged attackers and planners will be punished. He notes that their requests for bail are being challenged. He said the main problem is that some criminals in his country are not punished for 10 years after their illegal acts. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. We really do want to hear what interests you, so tell us what you want to hear about. Our email address is learningenglish@voanews.com. Every day, we read every message you send us. The Economics Report and The Making of a Nation are coming up next. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report.
You know how much your telephone has changed over the past 10 years? Your car will change even more than that in the next 10 years. One of the big changes is that cars will drive themselves. Someday, you may not need to drive a car. You will just tell the car where you want to go, and it will drive itself. The American company Google has been working on a self-driving automobile for years. These cars are already on the roads in the United States, mainly in California. Google cars are truly self-driving. These cars have no steering wheels or pedals. According to Google, its self-driving cars have been driven nearly 2 million kilometers. That is equal to the distance the average person drives in 90 years. Another American company, Tesla, added an autopilot feature to its cars last month. Tesla put the feature, a computer software program, in cars that were built after September 2014. With the autopilot turned on, the vehicle drives itself. The car will speed up, slow down, brake, and steer by itself. The car uses sensors to know when lane changing is safe and whether it should speed up or slow down. A company called Best Mile plans to operate self-driving buses in Switzerland next spring. The buses will hold up to 9 people and will be tested for 2 years. A company called Royal will have self-driving trucks at construction sites in Florida by the end of this year. No drivers are needed in these vehicles. In a self-driving car, you would not have to be worried about talking on the phone or sending a text message. You could do other things while getting to where you need to go. Speed limits could rise with more people using self-driving cars. When self-driving cars prove they can operate at higher speed limits could be raised. Self-driving cars could drive people who are unable to drive themselves. They could travel without depending on others. Businesses could use self-driving cars to bring goods to your home, order food, and have a self-driving car transport it. Self-driving cars may cost a lot more than other cars. The self-driving feature may first be offered on the most costly cars. Lower-priced vehicles may take longer to offer the feature. But the cost of technology usually drops over time. For self-driving cars to become the norm, people have to trust them. Drivers have to become familiar with these cars and what they can do. Many laws need to be changed to permit use of self-driving cars. Lawmakers will need to consider who is responsible when a self-driving car has an accident.
And that's the VOA Learning English Technology Report.
I'm Jonathan Evans.
¶¶
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1863, Union forces defeated Confederate forces in the bloodiest battle of the American Civil War, the Battle of Gettysburg. Soon after that, the Union won another important victory, seizing Vicksburg, Mississippi. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue our story of the Civil War with the Battle of Vicksburg.
In November 1863, President Lincoln traveled to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. He spoke at the opening of a military cemetery. He felt very tired by the time he got back to Washington. Doctors thought he had a cold. Later, they said he had a weak form of smallpox. The president remained in bed. Few visitors could see him. There was a danger the smallpox could spread. Lincoln got better after a few weeks. He began working on his yearly message to Congress. After 2.5 years of war, he had good news to report. Union armies had gained 2 important victories at about the same time.
One was the Battle of Gettysburg. Union forces, led by General George Meade, had defeated Confederate forces, led by General Robert E. Lee. They pushed Lee back into Virginia. It was the last Confederate invasion of the North. The day after the Battle of Gettysburg, Union forces defeated Confederate forces at Vicksburg, Mississippi. This victory gave them control of the Mississippi River, and it split the states of the Confederacy.
Union General Ulysses Grant had been trying to seize Vicksburg for several months. It was not easy. Vicksburg lay on the east side of the Mississippi River. It was built high above the water on a rocky cliff. As the river flowed past Vicksburg, it turned in sharply at the base of the cliff and then continued on to the Gulf of Mexico. The Confederates had placed cannon all along the sharp turn in the river. Enemy boats sailing past made easy targets.
General Grant began the campaign for Vicksburg in late 1862. His army was west of the Mississippi River. He needed to get to the other side to attack the city. First, Grant planned to cross the river into northern Mississippi State. Then he would march south to Vicksburg. He crossed the river, but Confederate forces destroyed his transportation and supply lines. He withdrew. Early in 1863, he tried again.
This time, he planned to sail his men past Vicksburg. They would cross the river a little downstream, turn, and attack. Grant moved 40,000 men to a point 10 kilometers from Vicksburg. He told the men to put down their guns and take up digging tools. they would build a canal to carry them past the turn in the river, past the Confederate cannon.
For weeks, the Union soldiers worked on the canal. They dug through mud and wet clay. Many died of disease. After more than a month of digging, engineers decided that the canal would not work. Grant ordered the men to build another canal, then another. They did not work either. By this time, the Union soldiers had become experts at digging canals. One of them said, "As soon as the canals at Vicksburg are finished, we are going to cut a canal across the upper part of Florida. We will cut that state off from the Confederacy and give it to the alligators."
Finally, in April 1863, Grant gave up all ideas of getting past Vicksburg without a fight. He decided to march most of his men down the west side of the river to a steamboat landing 30 kilometers below Vicksburg. He would send his Navy boats past the city at night and hope for the best. It took 3 weeks for Grant's men to reach the steamboat landing. The roads were very rough. In many places, they were covered with water. Engineers had to cut trees and cover the muddy roads with logs so wagons would not sink. They had to build bridges over the many streams.
On the night of April 16th, the Union Navy made its run past Vicksburg. 8 gunboats and 3 empty troop boats floated down the dark river. Their engines were silent. The Confederates, however, had built fires along the river. They saw the Union boats and began to shoot. They hit most of the boats, but destroyed only one. The damaged boats reached safety below the city. On the last day of April, the Union troop boats began carrying soldiers to the east side of the river. About 23,000 men crossed. Right away, they faced a force of 8,000 Confederate soldiers. They drove the Confederates back.
Grant then ordered the rest of his army to cross to the east side of the river. Some of his officers protested. They said it would be impossible to get supplies to a large army east of the river. Grant was not worried about supplies. He said the men should bring only coffee, hard bread, and salt. Anything else could be taken from the farmers of Mississippi. Their homes, he said, were full of food.
Grant decided not to throw his men against the strong defenses around Vicksburg immediately. Instead, he marched them east toward Jackson, the state capital. Jackson was the supply base for the Confederate Army defending Vicksburg. Grant wanted to cut the supply lines between the two cities. He also wanted to prevent the soldiers in Jackson from joining the soldiers in Vicksburg. Grant captured Jackson easily. He left some troops to destroy enemy supplies. He took the remaining troops and turned back toward Vicksburg.
Grant attacked Vicksburg several times. Each time, his troops were thrown back. The city's defenses were too strong. Grant then decided to surround the city and wait until its food was gone. That, he thought, would make the Confederates surrender. Grant closed in with men and artillery. As one soldier wrote, "The circle of Union forces around the city was so tight that a cat could not have crept out without being discovered. Nothing could get out, nothing could get in." Weeks passed. The Union army shelled the city. The Confederate army answered from time to time. Food supplies dropped. There was little to eat except cornbread and the meat of mules. Some people caught rats and ate them.
Finally, the Confederate commander, General John Pemberton, decided the situation was hopeless. He sent word to Grant that he was ready to discuss surrender. The two commanders met under a white flag of truce. Grant demanded unconditional surrender. Pemberton rejected the demand. Pemberton's men were to be prisoners. That was a fact. But Pemberton wanted them released immediately on parole. He told Grant that his men would promise to stay out of the war if permitted to return to their homes. If not, he said, they would continue to fight.
Grant agreed to let the Confederate soldiers go home. He and Pemberton signed the surrender agreement on July 4th. The siege of Vicksburg had lasted 47 days. Never had a Union army won such a victory. Grant had taken 30,000 Confederate soldiers out of the war. He had captured 60,000 guns and 170 cannon. These were serious losses for the Confederacy. It already was low on manpower and weapons, but an even greater loss was the control of the Mississippi River. With Vicksburg in Union hands, the North could control the whole length of the river, and the Confederacy was split badly.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. You can find transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.